Hi, and welcome to the Rare Business Podcast. My name is Adrian Swinsko, and I'm a consultant, advisor, researcher, and writer on all things related to customer service and customer experience. Through this podcast, I seek out and interview CEOs, entrepreneurs, business and tech leaders, and leading thinkers about what it takes to build organizations that produce better outcomes for both customers and employees in this fast-moving modern age that we live in. If this is your first time listening to one of these interviews, then welcome. And please do dive into the archives at adrianswinsko.com, as I've now completed over 250 of these interviews in the last few years. If this is not your first time listening, then thank you for returning, and I'll aim to do a good enough job to keep you coming back week after week. Anyway, that's enough from me right now. Let's get into the interview. First of all, welcome. Hello, Martin.
Thank Martijn. You. Martijn. My character doesn't change, however you call me.
So Martijn, I'll see if I get this right. Martijn Ribnow.
You're pretty close, actually.
Thank you very much. You are the CTO of Genworth Financial. So some people, I mean, I got listeners all over the world, but many people may not be familiar with Genworth as being a Main Street or High Street sort of brand. So can you tell us a little bit about you and a bit about sort of the work that you do to give us some color?
Well, a few things.
Okay.
If I speak strange, it's Dunglish, combination of English and Dutch. So please correct me if you don't understand.
We love the Dutch.
Secondly, if you call me CTO, everybody will be upset.
Okay.
I think I'm the Chief Transformation Officer or Chief Operating Officer, but I really don't care that much about titles.
Right.
In the end, the most important people are the people, our frontline employees who are dealing with our customers day in, day out, and I'm my overhead. So,
yeah.
Chief, you know, who cares about that? In terms of Genworth Financial is an S&P 500 company, and we offer mortgage solutions to all major banks.
Mm-hmm.
It's more business to business, and we're the market leader in the long-term care insurance, and we also offer life insurance.
Okay.
And I'm the chief operating officer for that part of the business, and one of the key reasons I joined, and I think I said it on stage, is I really have here an opportunity to help to shape the industry, offers for customers and employees around the theme of aging. If you look ahead, then for me, technology and aging are the biggest intrigued mega trends.
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree. I have this a bit of a bugbear when it comes to sort of aging. If you look at the socio-demographics and economic indicators where you've got this aging population, particularly the baby boomers, and they control most of the assets and most of the disposable income, and yet, so it's about 75% or something, but yet only about 5% of ad spend or marketing spend is actually targeted at those kind of people. I look at it and just go, hang on, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, you know what is changing? You'll see that companies like Unilever and Procter & Gamble are adopting already because they see the need to adjust, for example, their razors to make their problem. If I start shivering with my hand to make that a better experience.
You know,
so they will be spearheading the changes.
Right, that's interesting.
For sure. I think in 2030, 25% of the world population over than 65.
Mm.
And you know, I shared some facts on stage. You know, every day 10,000 people retire in the US.
Mm.
By 2030, I think you have 177 people older than 65.
Right.
And most of us will get something.
Yeah.
No. And need some support.
Of course.
And the government is not funding all of that.
Nope.
Medicare, Medicaid has already some funding issues.
Yep.
So we're really passionate to try to solve that puzzle. And it's not only about insurance products, but also services.
Mm-hmm.
What are the kind of services we can offer to ensure you don't have to claim and stay longer at your home? So
sure. That
whole part intrigued me.
And so you mentioned a couple times that you're on stage and we're kind of here at PegaWorld in Las Vegas, and there's been a lot of talk over the course of the last couple of days about customer centricity, transformation, becoming more agile, like all these different sort of things. Yeah, but then if we look at the stats, if we step back a minute and away from all the excitement and energy and stuff, I mean, this transformation stuff is hard, right? And I know that you've been through it you've been through the wash a couple of times and they sort of...
And the dryer all at the same time. That's the reason I have no hair.
Maybe the thing I would like to hear from you, because you talked about bringing your experience to bear in Genworth. I mean, what are some of the big lessons that you've learned
along the way and that you brought to bear in Genworth? Great. Because you've got the battle scars. You've been through the ringer a couple of times.
You can see it on my face. Well, I was always intrigued already when I did my MBA in customers and technology, my entire life.
Right.
As you know, I joined ING, had a very good education there, was part of the team who helped to develop the Internet Competence Center and the Dutch ING Direct. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where I really was, I think, trained to think end consumer. Mm-hmm. But you should be passionate about it.
Yeah, of course.
So if you just talk about it, nothing happens. So first one, passionate. So you go to any company, talk with the executives and ask the question, mm-hmm. do you own the product of your own company? Mm-hmm. Who is visiting or listening to a customer context employee daily or every month? Mm-hmm. Who is visiting a customer? So if you don't ingrain your organization in terms of your culture, that you really drive that, nothing will happen. The same with your metrics.
Yeah.
Your metrics should be focused then on either Net Promoter Score or SQM. That should be at least 25% of your reward system.
Okay.
Secondly, if you're truly customer-centric, you have to have a customer board.
Yes.
So if you don't organize...
Is that like an advisory kind of council? Yeah. So bring the customers inside the walls.
So if you don't do that in anything, so you need to change your culture, your processes, your reward systems, then you can drive it and staff.
I think it's also important that the, because I've seen many companies that will engage agencies or market research people to try and do and manage that sort of thing, but actually...
You should do it yourself.
Well, exactly, because then you get unfiltered.
They're your customers.
Well, exactly.
So darn if you don't do that, I'm not good at it in today's job. But in my previous job, I spent a third of my time basically with my own employees, a third of just walking around because they need to offer the solution.
Yeah, and that's something I've been interested in is the idea, because I have a belief that it's a belief where the frontline employees that actually serve customers, they're rock stars.
They want to do the right thing.
Exactly, they're just not getting the right help sometimes.
No, and they sometimes have to deal with 16 systems, etc. So if you don't, maybe it's wrong English, treat your frontline employees well, enable them, how can you be ever customer centric? By the way, in terms of processes, if you really are customer centric, actually you should test everybody comes into the business in a assessment or a way that they need to handle a customer case. Mm. And the other thing what I really hate is this internal customer stuff. Focus on the person who pays your salary, that's the customer.
Yeah.
So, I said it in a more strong language on stage, but I just stop with an internal customer, focus on one.
I think the other thing about the frontline sort of thing, you've mentioned it about spending time with your frontline employees. I mean, there's this old idea, this idea of going to the Gemba. Have you heard of that?
No, what is Gemba?
Gemba is a Japanese word.
Oh, sorry, no, the Gemba, okay.
The Gemba.
Yeah, so, no, the system.
Yeah. Yep. So, and it's, I think it's a real behavior.
No.
So get out of meetings, get out from behind your computer, get out from behind the dashboards and your metrics and your spreadsheets and things and go to the Gemba. And so, do you know what the Gemba means?
Yep. I worked in Japan for a short stint.
So I'm teaching you to suck eggs.
No. You don't do that. No, I was... fascinated culture, by the way, and they are really, I think, in terms of process oriented and change. There, I think, well, they learned it from the U.S., by the way.
Well, Deming, that's the one that
they took it. I think true big innovations are still coming out of the U.S. U.S. I must say, but back to customer centricity. This whole theme is you must think end consumer is think in simplicity. And if you work in financial services, specifically insurance companies, we do everything to make things complex. Mm-hmm. So making things simple is the most complex concept there is. It's partly driven in all fairness by regulations and think you cannot screw up your business model because you really deal with people's money.
And we are inside the side of caution.
Well, and in insurance, I promise something over 30 days. So of course, it's for over 30 years.
Yeah.
So there should be regulation. However, on top of that, most life insurance companies work with intermediaries. Mm-hmm. So you think your end consumer is the intermediary, and then you start making complex products. Mm-hmm. But in the end, if you really want to go digital and digital transformation, you need to simplify your product and your solution. If you don't do that, you're basically old-fashioned, was the ING in early age of the internet, you put your marketing brochure on the internet. Mm-hmm. Well, nothing changed there.
Mm-hmm. So, but that's, you know, so you said that it's, you know, it's the hardest thing. I mean, it is easier to add things than it is to take things away. And I don't know if you know, there's an agency or consulting firm called Siegel and Gale in the US that have a simplicity index.
Okay, cool.
And they rank a whole bunch of different...
you need to email them with that.
Yeah, cool. I will do. Good, and thanks. So Siegel and Gale have this simplicity index, and they track all sorts of different firms for their perceived simplicity, not for what they say, but how their customers perceive
them. That's the only relevant thing.
And they have a basket of these stocks, and they outperform everybody else by a factor of like 300%. Or something over the last kind of 10 years. It's just mind-blowing.
So I use examples. Right. So in one company, I just printed out everything we sent to a customer. I put it on a car and drove it in.
Right, okay.
So I said, what is this? People said, "What? This is what we sent to our customer."
Yeah. But the idea of it, I mean, it's easy to talk about, but it's way, way harder to do.
But so you need to use cases. The other thing in your management team meetings, mm-hmm. again, I'm not there yet, you should talk customer stories.
Right.
To start with, if you make a decision memo, what is the effect on the customer? Mm-hmm. So that are all the things I want, you know, when I'm not there yet everywhere, but there are the things you need to think through.
Yeah.
And what I did lately, I took all our applications mm-hmm. and put sticky notes on where the customer needs to send a signature.
Yeah.
It was a stack like this.
Yeah.
I said, guys, this you can digitize this. Mm-hmm. It's still a complex experience.
Yes.
The only thing is you can, with DocuSign, you know, click, click, click.
Yeah.
But still the same complex products.
But then if you go back to the idea about the aging kind of like group and people that you're serving, and you go in DocuSign, and they're going to go, what? Yeah.
Well, there's one thing I discovered. 70% of the people who, for example, claim us, mm-hmm. because people buy our products when they're 45 and 60, right. are actually family members.
Okay.
So that was also a lesson learned for me. So in our business model, we not only need to look at our end consumer, mm-hmm. but also at family members or the caregivers, also as the next group of customers.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, it always mind boggled me that we make things complex. And I always thought that innovation and thinking differently is depending. Everybody can do that.
Yeah, yeah.
I discovered that's not true. Mm-hmm. It's just people are differently wired. And by the way, you need mix and multifunctional teams. So you really should look at those folks, it can be anywhere, mm-hmm. who just ask different questions.
But don't you also think that when people start talking about being creative and problem solving and being innovative and all those sort of things, and you start sort of framing things in that sort of like language, sometimes it can put blocks up because people have these kind of like this idea that I'm not creative, I'm not innovative, so therefore they don't respond.
Innovation is also frequently overrated. I mean, if you're really customer centric, you go to all your output mm-hmm. and you check, does an end consumer understand this?
Yeah.
And you check everything with an outside copywriter. Can you write it first?
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of the innovations, we still have to do so much basic stuff.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a complete believer in that. The idea of like, you know, the basis of actually wowing your customers or delivering a great experience actually starts with the basics.
So I learned at ING Direct, retail is detail. Mm-hmm. And in the end, I think I said it in Munich. I also got a question about customer centricity. Yeah. I said, I think I did no need for any new concepts, nothing. The real challenge is to execute it.
Yeah.
Because we still talk about it. We still talk about 2012. And about 5 years, we still will do that.
So if I was to say to you, somebody's listening and going, simplicity, all right, fine, I get it. But if I need to sell it, I need to start it, I need to kind of generate some momentum.
Yeah, how do you do that?
Like, tell me how.
I can give you an example. I went to a claims organization. And imagine this. You buy a long-term care insurance, maybe at the age of 50, 55.
Yeah.
And then you claim at the age of 80.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a long period in between.
Sure.
So imagine now I paid $2,000 for 20 years. You're the customer. Mm-hmm. I'm your son. Mm-hmm. And I see my parent here get an issue.
Sure.
Then I want to get an answer quick if I'm eligible for my claim, yes or no.
Sure.
That took 53 days. So I thought, that's just not okay.
Particularly if you're ill.
Yeah, or even if you're not ill, but you want to know that.
Well, sure. It's like an emergency service,
so
right?
So I asked my question, why is that? And you're nothing against the people we're working with. Mm-hmm. We made such a complex product mm-hmm. with looking about APSs, medical records, etc. So we rethought that whole process. And I basically said, you know, what is focus on one decision document,
right,
and it should be, in the end, it should be in a week. How do we get there? So okay. I was merciless on basically then kind of the toll gates.
Yeah.
And you know, if it gets 2 weeks, mm-hmm. that's 2 weeks. So I think it starts also to say, for example, new products, I put it on stage. Now it's now, you know, 47 days. How do we get it in 30 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
How do we get it in 30 minutes? We don't need to be there tomorrow. What are then the steps to get there?
So do you think the key to that then is actually...
Stubbornness.
Well, being stubborn, obviously.
No, seriously.
No, but I've also but that's facilitated by applying constraints.
Yes.
So you go, I don't think this is acceptable, but I want to know, tell me why it can't be this long.
Yeah.
And now you almost force people to...
And if you walk in your organization, mm-hmm. you know also people are... open for that. So that's one of the other reasons. When I start in an organization, I always start as an intern. So I will go to my primary process.
Right.
I'm a claim. What happens with me? I'm an application. The fun thing is you're going to start to keep processes.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people tell you how things are really happening.
Sure, sure.
And then you also start seeing, okay, that are the people I need to tell together.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit scary for some folks who really want to be in control.
Sure.
Because I go straight to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That also tells you something, which managers maybe need some help.
Yeah.
Let me say it that way. So I try always to understand my core processes, and that fills me a little bit. Then okay, what is kind of doable? And then I would say if you're told everybody, it takes more. You can order a car faster than we issue an insurance policy. Do you want to have that happening to you? No. So hey guys, help me out.
Sure.
The only thing what I need to be careful with is not. Deny the past, the good work was done in the past.
Of course.
So basically what I try to say, forget everything you did.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it was wrong, just if you can start new,
mm-hmm.
how would you do that if you were a customer?
Yeah, yeah.
And if you start doing that, you get some more, with a mix of team, you get the right energy.
Yeah.
And then I make a roadmap.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, this is the point we need to go to. What are the next steps?
Yeah.
Otherwise, it becomes so gigantically far away that people don't get there.
Yeah.
And if you start with the first blocks, actually it goes faster.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, that makes sense. And so going back to this, the whole transformation programs, I mean, you know, Pega World is Pega Systems, and there's a lot of talk about new technology and stuff, and there's a lot of talking about new technology and digital transformation and just more generally sort of transformation programs. The technology change can move a lot faster than can move really fast. And the thing I would be interested in and be exploring with a couple of people over the last couple of days is this idea, so that sometimes do we need to be cognizant of like throttling kind of different kind of paces of, you know, how we proceed? Because sometimes there is a danger, and I think this is why many programs fail, is that they don't match the pace. So you can only go as fast as your slowest member, as it were. And have you seen that? Sometimes
absolutely, and I screwed up as well.
Right.
I think overall in my career it's 51-49. But you rather move ahead. So if you design a transformation program, you need to have a kind of point of view where you want to go,
yeah,
and what your case for change is, but you also should be honest what your capabilities are.
Mm.
Otherwise it becomes a disaster.
Yeah, yeah.
And you never can scale your capabilities like this.
Mm-hmm.
I always work with a few guiding principles, and you need to tailor them a little bit to the context of the organization.
Sure.
But in general, I believe that you first need to simplify your processes to the degree you can do.
Yeah.
And then organize around it, and then do your technology.
Right, okay.
And the other risk, is with the technology of today, and for a powerful tool like Pega, is that, you know, it brings the technology in the hands of the user. But if you don't have a point of view where you want to go, you basically build the as is.
Sure.
And Agile actually make that worse.
Well, yeah.
Because then you Agile your way in Alice in Wonderland. So you want to be very careful not to go, you know, chase, you know, yourself from Saul is really far ahead where I'm with Agile.
Mm-hmm.
So I still use Agile in a waterfall method, which mm-hmm. works for me now because it takes time to deliver muscle memory.
Sure.
So I always start with a very small pilot, which I'm fine if it fails, preferable not, that people can start learning that.
Exactly, it's a learning.
And then you build the capability step by step. So I never go parallel.
Mm-hmm.
If I cannot prove I can go sequential well.
Right, okay.
And you know, you get some flag because, you know, Martin, you need to go fast. As you see my character, I want to go fast.
Yeah.
But if you really cannot do that, it becomes a disaster.
Mm-hmm. So where are you at? Where are you at in the Genworth kind of journey?
So at the Genworth journey, a few parts. If I look at from my business model perspective, sales to service, we simplified a lot of our claims process already. Mm-hmm. Simplifying our new business process, and in terms of Pega, we simplified our eligibility process. Mm-hmm. Now we're using Pega for that. Mm-hmm. Simplified payments, using Pega for that. Now I put it as a unified desktop over all my systems,
right,
which are a lot. Mm-hmm. Then I will start going back, mm-hmm, by, because you discover things you didn't think, by streamlining the next level, and then I go to the next part.
And how long is that taking you to get to
so
that?
So we started in 2016. I think it will take me to 2020-21, because I have the, we have also the vision to use Pega as really our single source of truth. That means that I also want to get all the rules out of our admin systems.
Right.
And that's not workflow. Mm-hmm. That's more of a to be architectural play.
Yeah, yeah.
So you really need to be clear how you want to use Pega. I also want to use it to simplify we want to simplify our application landscape.
Right.
So you need to be very clear in the beginning where you want to use Pega. I'm aware that there are not a lot of customers who really use it for everything. Mm-hmm. Will not use it for everything. Most use it either for claims or for partner. For me, it's really a base layer, mm-hmm, across my systems.
So new foundations for your new house.
Yeah. No, well said.
And so what? So you're sort of like 2 years in, 18 months in?
Yeah, 18 months in. 18 months.
And are you already seeing sort of positive outcomes, both customer and employee level?
The thing is, I already saw the positive outcome before I start, because I simplified most of the processes.
Okay.
So actually the business case then, the business case gets worse. So no, for me the transformation case is the combination of the simplification, and I use Pega to underpin it.
Right.
In the next second round, I will start seeing all the other benefits of Pega.
Okay.
So for me, just by using Pega makes it possible for me to do what I do today.
Okay. So final words, well, two final words. Martin, tell me about your, Martin, for the listeners here, Martin's got the most wonderful jacket that he wore on stage, which has got some incredible detail on it. Now, if you haven't been able to tell, Martin is a proud Dutchman. And tell me about the detail on the inside and why you actually, tell me about the jacket. Bring the jacket to life.
So the jacket. So a few things. So our colors of our flag are red, white, blue, and orange is our royal color.
Yeah.
So the
an orange watch on as well.
Yeah, oh yeah. So yeah. The origination of Orange is the House of Orange, Willem of Orange.
Yes, indeed.
So, as you know, uh-huh, there was a time we were also part of the.
I'm Scottish, so I'm.
Yeah, no, you're not I, feel I, offended that we were. We took over England.
It's complicated.
England. Yeah. No, it's fun. No, so. And I also like orange for different reasons, a very bright, innovative culture, mm-hmm, and all our national teams using orange.
Yes.
And there's a deep relationship between the Dutch and the Americans. We were the first who gave a loan after the revolution, uh-huh, a very long relation, and I love the US as well. Mm-hmm. But you know, this jacket I developed a little bit myself, a little bit of a nerd. So I put the national anthem in there, uh-huh, our flag, our phrase. Even the buttons are red, white, blue. And I thought it was kind of fun to walk up with Dutch music.
It's the most fabulous jacket.
And, you know, it just spices up a little bit. And if you're here in this wonderful place in Las Vegas, you know, you need to spice it up a little bit. Yep. So it's a content event, infotainment. You want to be sure that information always is more than the entertainment.
Yes,
I think.
Indeed.
So we tried to match that a little bit, and I hope it was successful. But again, that's not for me to say.
Well, I love it.
I think it's in the audience.
I'm thinking that, and I'm going, oh, I could see a blue one for a Scottish.
It's fun to do. It's fun to do.
Yeah.
That's a good conversation starter.
And so, final word. If you were to give, I mean, if my listeners are execs, leaders, entrepreneurs that are interested in service and experience, and if you were to give them one piece of advice in order to help them become more customer focused or customer centric, in either their own behavior or also in their, you know, their helping their firms and their organizations to do that, what would you say to them?
Understand what your customer's going through yourself. So if you work in a bank, open a bank account, just be a customer.
Perfect. Martin, thank you.
My pleasure. It's fun to do.
Well, that's it for another interview. I really hope you enjoyed it. Now, every time I complete one of these interviews, I learn something new, and I try and incorporate that new learning into my writing, my speaking, my workshops, and the consulting that I do for my clients. If you're interested, you can find out more about how I work with clients over at adrianswimsko.com. But one final thing before I go, please consider heading over to iTunes or whichever podcast platform you choose to use, and do leave a review. Every little helps, as they say. Anyway, that's all for now. Thank you for listening, and do listen in again. All the very best.